Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley. I'm your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. We're going to talk about all three of those things today. My guest is Michael Jonas, and Michael and his wife, Barbara, were voted by People Magazine to be one of America's most romantic couples. They've created many games that ABC News proclaimed were love, laughter, and romance in a box. Welcome again, Michael Jonas, the first time this year. So glad you're on the program again.
It is really nice to be back.
Thank you. And I've always appreciated your sense of humor.
If you look at the world today, I don't know how one would continue without a sense of humor.
Yeah, I think that's right. And in your Make a Date free downloadable, which we'll talk about in a minute, one of your questions, I love your questions, you quote Ben Franklin as saying, "We are a tool-making animal. Which tool do," and I'm going to change the pronoun, "you find essential for daily activities, thick skin, a sense of humor, my first cup of coffee, antacid tablets, stamina?" And I'm going to guess sense of humor would be your answer.
Yes, because if one stops laughing, one starts crying.
Yes. A sense of humor is essential. And since I only have you for half the program, and that's still true, I think, yes?
Yes.
So then the listeners will get just me, and I'll probably expand on the humor aspect a bit. And but today, we're going to have you back, of course, 2-2 for part two. So February 2nd, it'll be a little closer to Valentine's Day when the focus will be on romance. And but for this program, we're going to look at, are you too old for sex? Well, probably not. But you wrote an article, you and Barbara wrote an article for Grand Magazine addressing this question. Grand, tell us about Grand Magazine.
Well, it's a publication aimed initially at grandparents. Mm-hmm. The idea was to be able to communicate with people at various stages in life. Mm-hmm. And that is clearly for many people, it's a clearly defined stage. But it comes with a lot of what I consider to be unnecessary social baggage. Expectations, of diminished capabilities, diminished motivations, diminished opportunities. And I think what the baby boomers are proving today, which is an extension of Grand's message, is that it ain't necessarily so.
Yes, including remaining sexual as we grow older.
And it may not necessarily be the same kind of sexuality that one experienced in their 20s and 30s. It may be a different, but it doesn't mean that it's diminished in importance and benefit and pleasure and proximity to your partner.
Yes, exactly. I think aging really brings a lot of advantages to sexuality and sexual communication. Men and women, but after 50, just to put a number on it, can actually, there's a crossover where the man can become more romantic. He takes more time. He's more interested, perhaps, in foreplay. And the woman becomes more assertive, and she can say what she wants and needs. And this is good. So her male side comes up a little more, and the guy's female side, the so-called anima, and the male side being the animus in Jungian terms.
So, oh my gosh! I think also what happens in long-term relationships is that couples, a lot of the performance requirements are, the relationship sheds the performance requirements. And you become more focused on what pleases your partner and less focused on, am I a good lover? Will he or she think I'm sexy, and you've gone through those stages, and now you don't have that stuff to carry around. You can actually concentrate on each other and on what pleases each other. It's easier to ask for what you want, which mm-hmm. I think for many couples is a big step in my opinion anyway, in the right direction.
Oh, yes.
It's huge. It's huge. Pleasuring one's partner, there's a little less self-involvement. I love to quote my fiancé, Brian. He says, worship your woman, and the goddess will reward you. So I get to play goddess. It's very nice. I like it a lot.
I can see how the feminine ego would slide right into that role.
Well, my name is Diana. She was a goddess.
Believe me.
Also a princess, but I'll take goddess in this case.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
It's all right. You write into Old for Sex and Grand Magazine, and we spoke off the air yesterday a little bit about this. The number one thing is keep yourself physically fit if you want to have good older sexuality, and that's essential. Would you expand on that, Michael Jonas?
Sure. I actually think, without any clinical basis for this comment, incidentally, that physical fitness is really an aphrodisiac, because mm-hmm. not only does physical exertion release endorphins, but even more importantly, it gives you a really strong sense of your own physical well-being and capabilities. Mm-hmm. And you feel better about yourself physically, and that's got to lead you to feel more attractive, more sexually engaged. So I think all these things are all kind of tied together. And I think it's tied to diet.
Mm-hmm.
People
mm-hmm.
eating well and eating correctly, correctly meaning what works best for them and for their body. I think all those things affect your state of mind, and that's where the aphrodisiac works in your mind. Where we're not marketing yet physical chemicals for aphrodisiacs that, or at least not any that the FDA has approved. But
yes,
there are
yes.
things you can do psychologically and physically for yourself that have a strong sexual precursor part to them.
Yes, and older folks that remain flexible clearly have better sex. I mean, they can have more positions in terms of intercourse and on and on and on. So sometimes taking yoga classes can be useful. But you and Barbara take spinning classes. Talk about that a little bit and how that...
We sort of wandered into this about 12 or 13 years ago. We were probably like most people that had not done indoor spin classes. We were probably intimidated by the idea of pedaling to a point of physical exhaustion, which of course mm-hmm. is not the case. And good spin classes with good spin instructors, you work at your own level.
Mm-hmm.
It's intense. It's a very, very compact experience. It doesn't take hours of running. Most spin classes are 45 minutes long. They become very popular socially in certain marketplaces, but they're also just a great way to use time creatively and instructively for well-being. And then, of course, you're socializing with people who share an interest in the same activity. I think it doesn't really make any difference what the activities are, whether you play tennis or this new popular sport that Barbara and I have been playing, pickleball, which has the most ridiculous name, but it's a fabulous game to play, or spin classes or yoga. It's just staying engaged in the world physically.
And that is so important. And then you also belong to Silver Sneakers, which is nationwide.
What happened was we changed club memberships and joined a fitness facility at a community college. And that community college like facilities all over the country, participate in a program called Silver Sneakers, which is funded by the Medicare supplement plans. Not all the plans do that, but most do. And so they pick, each time you go, you sign in or you register in, and that supplement plan that supports Silver Sneakers actually pays a fee to your facility. And what they're really saying is that they can reduce medical costs. I mean, there's clear evidence they can reduce medical costs by increasing preventative medicine and promoting physical well-being.
Yes, and of course, remaining sexual is an excellent way to do that too, because you get all of these wonderful endorphins and oxytocin and a sense of connectedness.
And it's not bad for heart health either.
Right, exactly. It's cardio. It can be, depending upon the level, but it's cardio. So you're offering, as you did last April when you were last on the program, a freebie for the listeners. And so explain this, and I'll add on to it, and I'll certainly write about it when I do the write-up for the archived versions of this show.
Well, as you know and as you've mentioned, we Barbara and I have been creating romantic and communication dating games for many years. And our flagship game is a game called An Enchanting Evening. It is, as ABC News called it, slow laughter and romance in a box. But what we've also done is, as a precursor to moving into the electronic, the digital-based games, we've created two downloadable, printable, playable games. One called Make a Date, which is a dating conversation game, and one is called Romantic Interlude, which is intimate, and think of it as kind of foreplay. And so what we are doing for your listeners is if they go to our website, timefortwo.com.
So that's timefortwo.com.
Right, timefortwo.com. And when they go to check out, put in the code Wiley, capital W, then I-L-E-Y, they can obtain either one of the downloadable games at no cost. So what happens is you download it, print it, and then you and your partner play it. So there's no waiting for shipping. There's no lost boxes. There's it's instant gratification.
Yeah, and, I downloaded Make a Date, and it reflects yours and Barbara's just great creativity with the questions, and it really does stimulate discussion, which people need.
Well, the idea behind it was to open up channels of communication and to give people a comfortable place to talk about themselves without having to feel self-conscious. Mm-hmm. And we've stayed away from, hot subjects like religion and politics. And we've incorporated questions about things that and they're all positive. It's all very Pollyannish and very upbeat. So it's fond memories, it's preferences, it's experiences that you've enjoyed or want to enjoy. It's a way of letting the person you're communicating with, and this can be played between parents and children, between dating couples. I remember when we first started developing the conversation dating game called To Know You Better, which is this Make a Date is very much like that game. Barbara played it with her mother, and they had a wonderful time. They reminisced, and they laughed, and so the idea was to create space for positive. But I know this is really a mouthful, but there are psychotherapists that call it relationship reinforcing.
I like
so
that a lot, and I think it's
tried.
True.
That's what we've tried to do.
And there's a quote from the San Francisco Chronicle. The games are not age or culturally specific and have been used to help returning soldiers reconnect with their partners through fun and play. And I've worked with some returning warriors, and they need this kind of help because so often there's been a disconnect with when they've been gone.
So when we started this venture, mm-hmm. this adventure, I should say,
yeah.
Many moons ago, one of the conscious decisions we made was to not include pictures of any specific couples and or people in mm-hmm. our products, and to make our products non-specific as to gender, as to age, as to ethnicity. And the idea was to not require someone who wants to play one of our games to get past the images that are not associated or comfortable for them. And so we mm-hmm. made them general and non-specific. And as a result, we've gotten acceptance in a number of what I would call communities that a product that's more gender or age or culturally specific might not enjoy.
Your Enchanting Evening game, which was the original game, and we've talked about how Barbara created that a long time ago. And I was glad to see on your website, again, listeners, timefortwo.com, T-W-O.com. You have a page that tells how it originated, and I think that's great because it's a wonderful story. And since we only have you for half an hour, we won't tell it this time, but people can go and find it on the website. It's a great story.
And it's true.
I know it is.
Not every great story is true.
I know.
This is what happens to actually have happened the way we wrote about it.
I've known the two of you for a long time.
Yes, and, which is amazing because Barbara and I are in our 20s.
Right. My late husband Charlie and I even visited you in San Francisco.
And
we had such a nice visit. This is before you moved to Arizona. And so this goes back then. How many years?
Oh my gosh, we've been in Arizona now almost 14 years.
Yeah, 14 years.
Yeah, we lived in San Francisco for 21, mm-hmm. and then moved here in 2001.
Mm-hmm. 2001.
It seems like it all happened to another person.
You know, I think that is one of the advantages of aging, and even sexuality, because we can't help but be more aware of our mortality. We don't have as much time left as we had, say, at the age of 40. And so we want to make the most of it. I mean, those of us who are at all enlightened, we want to make the most of it. And, be in the moment and appreciate our partner. And as you said, sex may not take the same form, but it can still be very intimate. And couples that have good emotional intimacy tend to have better physical intimacy, but it's like a positive feedback loop.
Oh, yeah. I think they're all, I'm extrapolating from Barbara's and my relationship, but they all come together. They're all tied up in the same kind of bundle or cluster of feelings and emotions and experiences, so that they spill over. When we have fun together watching a movie, it makes each of us feel sexier about each other. When we do something outdoors, you know, we bring that pleasure back into the house. When we eat a good meal, whatever we share, all whatever you're sharing that is enjoyable has spillover or expanded benefits into other parts of the relationship.
That is very true. And we have found, research has discovered that people that have adventures, now you may not have the physical adventures like river rafting, although some older people do that, but when you have adventures, the adrenaline goes up, and that can translate into better sex later because you've shared this together, and it's been an adventure.
Oh yeah, and it does. Well, one of the wonderful things about adventures, whatever they are, mm-hmm. is doing something new, breaking routines, expanding the boundaries of the relationship are all energizers. Barbara and mm-hmm. I talk about that in the book that we wrote, and that's an undercurrent in some of our game products, expanding the relationship, new, exciting things to share, or exciting things to bring back to the relationship if these are individual things that you share mm-hmm. later. So, yeah, I mean, boredom is a killer.
Oh, for sure. The most common presenting problem I see in my practice and have pretty much for the 33 years I've been doing this work is mismatched desire. And one person has higher desire than the other, but almost always the undercurrent is boredom. They've settled into a routine, and it's not a good thing. It's not good for the sex life.
No question.
Yeah. And so let's see. I wanted, before you have to go, I wanted you to talk a little bit about what we discussed yesterday on the phone. And 'cause we were talking about the art of conversation and how it may be on its way out, for especially for younger people, although we're focusing a little bit more for this program on older people. But many years ago, you and Barbara spent 18 months in the Peace Corps and in Ghana. And talk about that. I think it was probably a life-changing experience for the two of you.
Yeah, no. We actually spent 2 years Africa. But yeah, what I was mentioning to you was that for the first 18 months that we were overseas, mm-hmm. we did not speak with anyone in our family or our friends. We wrote aerograms, which were the self-contained letters. We sent these little reel-to-reel, small reel-to-reel tapes back and forth. But there was no immediate conversations. And when I was talking with you about it yesterday, we were juxtaposing that with the kind of total connectivity that people today seem to thrive on or demand. I don't know if they thrive, but they demand it. And that led to thinking about, is that a conversation? Is that really communication when you're thinking that I'm going to post something on Facebook for my 6,000 friends to read? Am I really communicating with anybody?
Exactly.
You know, do they really care what I ate for lunch, and why is that important?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think this whole connectedness it trivializes relationships. And it substitutes superficial experience for really something much that should be and can be much richer. So I just marvel at going out to dinner and seeing, you know, a group of people sitting at a table and they're all on their smartphones. And as I mentioned to you, we have a very good friend who's a psychiatrist and world speaker by the name of Carl Hammerschlag. And Carl's observation is when you see people on their smart devices mm-hmm. in social settings, they all want to be somewhere else. No one wants to be where they are. Everybody wants to be somewhere else.
Yeah. And that's profound. Expand on that a little bit, Michael Jonas, because he's a psychiatrist, right? And he had some tie-ins with Patch Adams.
Carl and Patch Adams do clowning work as a way of breaking down barriers to health delivery systems cross-culturally. They do, for example, they've been for years going to a very remote area in Peru and doing clowning work as a part of a community-based integrating people into a healthcare system. And their healthcare orientation is integrative preventative medicine, not curative. And so in these conversations that Barbara and I have had with Carl and his wife Elaine, and talking about or observing when we go out to dinner sometimes, and we're looking at these people sitting there with their smart devices, and that's when Carl said, you know, everybody wants to be somewhere else. And the other observation that I've made, and I'm not alone, a lot of people have made it, mm-hmm. is that you're with somebody. You're observing people who are with each other, and one or the other of the cell phones ring, and they immediately go to answer it, uh-huh. which breaks whatever conversation they're having with the person they are actually with, as mm-hmm. if that phone call has got to somehow be more important than the person I'm speaking with. There's something wrong with that somewhere.
There's something wrong with that, and the person that you're with, if they had any sense at all, they'd see that as rude.
Well, it's become so prevalent that people don't view it as rude anymore. Mm. That's probably a sad commentary on the world in which we live, that people are not offended by someone taking their cell phone out when it rings and starting a conversation with somebody on a cell phone and breaking the conversation that they're having in person.
Well, it's about...
I have to be careful when I step mm-hmm. down off my soapbox. I don't want to hurt my ankle.
Yes, indeed. But it is amazing to me. I've worked with some singles in my practice who are doing online dating, and I've heard it reported that sometimes there will be a month or two where they still haven't spoken to the person they've met online. It's all texting. And
yeah.
So I will admonish, please have a phone conversation at least.
Well, that's one of the reasons why our games have been successful, because what they require,
yes.
whether you're playing in an intimate game of ours like an Enchanting Evening or Romantic Sensations or Fan the Flames, or you're playing a dating game, conversation game like To Know You Better or Make a Date, you really turn off the world. And so you're focused on each other and you're focused on the relationship. And I don't think we take enough time to do that anymore. I worry that is the social fabric around relationships and intimacy is starting to fray a bit.
Indeed. And I recommend your games, especially Enchanting Evening, to many of my clients. And the caveat is put aside a couple of hours and set the scene and really focus in on each other. And I get back such positive reports. I even sent a game to my son's girlfriend. They live in New York City, and they said they really enjoyed playing it. And I hear this all the time. It opens up lots of conversations.
I have to tell you one quick story.
Please.
We get, for many years, we got bounce back cards in our games, postage paid cards, getting demographic information and how they bought the games, and then comments, place for comments. And
yeah.
Now we get those online, but... and we still get them, you know, by letter, and people still write to us, which is really kind of nice. But one of my favorites is a couple in the Midwest. When with an Enchanting Evening, we recommend exactly what you're saying, that you set aside special time, your favorite foods and things to drink, candlelight, whatever comfortable clothing, whatever is appropriate for your relationship.
Yeah.
That will enhance the experience. And so this couple wrote and said they followed our suggestion on four consecutive Saturday nights and got so turned on they never got to the game.
I love it. I love it. Four Saturday nights. Well, I've had lots of stories of great success, and I think I'm going to wait to talk about them till you come back on the 2nd of February.
Okay.
At which time we'll focus in on a little more on romance, because that's the centerpiece of your games, is romance and getting people to talk and to be present with each other.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Michael, thank you so much, and look forward to talking to you in a couple of weeks on the 2nd. And I'll put all of this up, and people can get free downloads, and you'll just love it. And plus, Time for Two, the website, is fascinating. It's really a lovely website, and it's informational, too. So,
thank you.
You're welcome.
I will see you, as they say, in a couple of weeks.
Terrific. And again, thank you for the time you've taken to be on Love, Lust, and Laughter. I've always appreciated your friendship and what you contribute. And your games, they're wonderful. They make such a difference in people's lives. You're welcome. Bye, Michael.
Bye-bye, dear.
Okay, so it's just you and me now. And I want to talk with you, and I also want you to please feel free to call in to join the conversation, and that would be 888-874-4888. And you can join in with what I'm talking about. Obviously, you have to be the live listeners. I know a lot of you listen to the archived versions, and I'm very grateful for that. This is year number 6 as of next month on Progressive Radio Network, and I'm very grateful. And as I said last week when I had Dr. Dudley Danoff on, that I'm so grateful for Progressive Radio Network, and I was able to visit the studios in person when I was in New York City over New Year's, and got to meet Jason and others, and it was wonderful. Gary Null has created a really great organization with Progressive Radio Network. So Michael Jonas and I were talking about aging and sexuality a little bit, about the healing powers of laughter, and I wanted to extend this talk a little bit and about, let me start with kissing, because, and then we'll go into the healing powers of laughter. In Michael and Barbara Jonas's games, they encourage people to kiss at times, and kiss your partner in a place where his or her body normally casts a shadow would be one example. But kissing is often a lost art, which is unfortunate because kissing is one of the least threatening and most exciting ways to vary your intimacy. But I've seen this time and time again. Couples fall into a pattern where they stop kissing. And instead, they really need, in my opinion, to experiment with playful kisses. And sometimes I hear from my clients, I hear this a little more from women, I really don't like the way my partner kisses me. So I suggest that they say, well, I'm going to kiss you the way I enjoy being kissed. And then you can pause mid-kiss and say, I love the way this feels. And then say, let me show you what it feels like to be kissed by me just now. So you can be very sort of creative about that. And kissing is fun. Kissing is a lot of fun. I think some women say, I really want soft kisses initially, not the tongue down the throat. And so I think it's important to start off easy. And you kiss lightly around her mouth. This is speaking to the guys here, on her cheeks or on her neck. And that's, of course, a very sensual thing to do. And then when you reach your mouth, listen up, guys, kiss her very softly on the lips. No insert tongue here kisses. Yet. Because actually going slowly is sure to entice her. And, you know, the other thing is that this is a little more sort of talking therapeutically, but the frequency of a couple's kissing has implications about issues like abandonment, divorce, and infidelity. You know, if you kiss, again, speaking to the man, if you kiss her often, it telegraphs your commitment. And I think that men sometimes use kissing primarily as a means to an end to advance, I don't know, sexual relations. And yet women mainly use kissing as a way to monitor the status of the relationship and especially the partner's commitment level. So I say make an effort to kiss her even when the sex, especially sexual intercourse, isn't in the cards. And that way there's an affectionate and sexual component to kissing. And it can reduce stress for both of you. So I'm all for lots of kissing. And kissing in and of itself. I had a couple years ago, I was in Palo Alto at the time, and they had not had intercourse in 2 years. So I suggested their homework was to go up on a lover's lane, which in those days, I think it probably still is, a Skyline Boulevard. So it runs along a ridge in the Bay Area, and it looks out over the whole bay and sparkling city lights, and it's just very romantic. So they went there, and they followed my instructions. They were only to kiss anywhere kind of above the waist, but just all kinds of kisses. And they brought a little champagne to have for this necking session. Groucho Marx said whoever called it necking was sure a poor judge of anatomy. But anyway, so they got so turned on that they went against what I had suggested. Of course, I was delighted to hear about it when they came back the next week. And that is, they had a van. And this is how long ago it was. It was a van. And so they got so turned on with just the kissing that they went in the back of the van and had intercourse for the first time in 2 years. So one thing can lead to another, for sure. If any of you want to join in this conversation, please do 1-888-874-4888. I want to move from kissing to laughter and silliness, because it's really, really important that, because couples who laugh together indeed last together. And this has been researched a lot, because it turns out that a shared sense of humor shows that you and your partner have common values, even needs, interests, and levels of intelligence. And all of these are keys to relationship longevity. Think about it. Of course, you know, lots of people are not masters of one-liners. But anyway, you know, you can come up with at least a playful attitude. And my prescription for long life is creative, for a long life is creative silliness. And creative silliness and laughing together, I think that there is an essential need for silliness in life. There is indeed a three-year-old inside of each one of us. And I'm really not here talking about the wounded inner child either. I'm talking about the happy, giggling three-year-old. There's a theory that Eric Byrne began to talk about a long time ago, 40 years plus, and it's called transactional analysis. And he talks about the ego states, the parent, the adult, and the child. And the parent ego state can be one of two. It can be the critical parent, and some of you listening may want to look this up, transactional analysis, to get more, because it's pretty fascinating. So the parent ego state can either be the critical parent, oh, you should be doing it this way, you ought to be doing it that way, blah, 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 or the nurturing parent. And we're in our nurturing parent when we're taking care of a sick child or a sick partner or somebody who's down and out. But the critical parent is a really hard ego state to diminish. And usually we have really well-developed critical parent ego states if we had an actual parent who was critical and judgmental. So then you have the adult ego state, and that's where we are, hopefully, for those of you listening and myself. We're in the moment sharing information, except you're not sharing back with me, but you might. But anyway, lots of people in the moment are sharing information. And then the child ego state. Now, I just spoke about there's a happy, giggling three-year-old child inside of each of us. And ideally, when we're making love, we should be in this child ego state, the playful child ego state, where there's no particular agenda. Sex doesn't necessarily have a beginning, a middle, and an end, that it's just really good. And some people will drink alcohol or take other drugs to put the critical parent to sleep so this child can come out to play. And that because, again, the critical parent is a very difficult ego state. It might even need some therapy. The other child state is the rebellious child, the child that says, fuck you, I will not do that, arms crossed in front. So so these are interesting transactional analysis ego states. Going back to the happy, giggling three-year-old that really should be there when we're having good sex. And, you know, you think about it. When asked about the most important characteristics in a partner, people often put sense of humor at the forefront. To have a sense of humor is very appealing and sexy. And humor has detoxifying and diffusing abilities that go a long way toward keeping relationships intact. This can really be important. If you and your partner are having a fight, maybe you can come up with a way to diffuse that. Maybe you've got some old banana water guns, and you don't necessarily shoot at each other, but you shoot it at the floor, and that can, with the laughter and the play, it can diffuse the fight, and that also helps with a one-down position. A one-down position is one person saying to the other, what can I do to make this better? So if you do that along with laughing, it can absolutely derail an argument. And then a good laugh, like a good cry or good sex. These are all natural tranquilizers. Because after there's a slight rise in heart rate and blood pressure, and the body muscles almost then immediately relax, and then the blood pressure drops. And at the same time, our brain may release endorphins, and these are nature's opiates. So it turns out laughing is a natural stress reliever. Laughing. And humor also heightens your ability to come up with creative solutions. There have actually been some interesting studies about this, that people come up with creative solutions after they've been laughing for a while. And it's about relaxing and, and opening up your mind. I'm reminded of Isabel Allende, who's written so many powerful and wonderful books. And she always starts her newest book of the new year on, I think, like January 20th, that would be tomorrow. And she always does it after she's made love with her husband. And she finds that she can be much more creative when she's relaxed from lovemaking. And, there's a lot of truth to that. And I do think that nowhere is humor more necessary than in the bedroom. And that's because, and I see this time and time again with my clients, there can be a lot of tension and pressure surrounding sex. So, whimsy can do a couple of good things for your sex life. And I think one of them is to supply novelty. And novelty is helpful because when there's novelty, the dopamine, the hormone of arousal, is released. And dopamine helps us have better sex, but we need novelty. So we need to make love in different places. We need to play out fantasies, have a bit of whimsy involved, so you get more dopamine. And then it can also help you know, if your partner is in the mood for the same kind of lovemaking as you are. Because partners are rarely in the same mood at the same time. So sometimes I suggest that they come up with a little chart. They can put it on their iPads, or they can just put it on a blackboard. And they come up with kind of a list of lovemaking moods. So they might include, number one, quick recreational aerobic, and then I want to go to sleep. Some people feel that way. Two, maybe I'm not so interested, but I'll go along. Three, reverent and spiritual, a three-hour momentous event. Now, you're probably not going to want to do number two, I'm not so interested, but I'll go along. And even time factors, because I talk about, and some of you who are regular listeners know this, the two syndromes that I see a lot. The DINS syndrome, which is double income, no sex syndrome, and the TTFS syndrome, which is too tired for sex syndrome. And, so you're not going to always have time, but I think a quickie can be good, and I think if you can create time, maybe after a date night or the next morning after a date night, if you have children, it's small children especially, it's going to be extra challenging to do this. But the games that Michael Jonas was talking about in the first half of this program really help the couple to slow down and focus in on each other and be in the moment. And that's crucial, crucial for hot sex, for good sex. I think, too, that taking yourself and your relationship a little more lightheartedly, it can have a number of positive effects. And one of them is a health effect, because it boosts the immune system by raising levels of endorphins. And it turns out that the receptors for endorphins in the brain are also found in white blood cells. We know that fighting off infections and other diseases is often helped when you have more endorphins. And you get those by being sexual. Hear, hear for sex. And, it's fascinating to me because the Zuni Indian culture, clowns are considered healers, right along with medicine men and women. So in that Zuni culture, Indian culture, if you come down with an illness, no matter what, you can choose to be treated by a clown. And, some of it could be an effect that just in your mind you feel like it's working, so it does work, and that can help. That can help a lot. But, I spoke earlier of creative silliness and in one's life, and this requires a certain amount of trust, because if we can be silly and play out a fantasy and all of that, it we need to trust our mate that that they're not going to make fun of us later. So it requires a fairly good, solid relationship so that you can have some fun. Silliness, the word silly did not originally mean ridiculous or trivial. It in fact comes from the Old English saleg, S-A-E-L-I-G, which originally meant blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy. And it's really possible that silliness is a way to feel all four things. I know I'm very grateful for the relationship I have with my fiancé, Brian, because here we are, two senior citizens, and we're just having a wonderful time sexually and otherwise. And we are, at times, silly. And I feel like that creates, in our relationship, more prosperity, more a sense of blessedness, and we are certainly happy and healthy. We're both much healthier because of a robust sex life. And as Michael Jonas and I were talking earlier, it's important for older lovers to stay physically fit
and keep your relationship fit and play together. Just feeling connected. And the fun has to do with the intimacy, and a way to stay healthy with each other is to enjoy it and to keep dating each other. Keep dating each other. I suggest to my clients that they have at least 2 date nights a month. They take turns creating the date night, making the plans for the date night, making some aspects of it a surprise to the partner, and then whoever has organized and planned the date night gets to initiate sex later that night or maybe the morning after. And so all of that works. You know, we need date nights. We need people that are married need to remind themselves that they are not just mom and dad, but husband and wife. And they need to have some time out where they can be positive and talk about loving things and how much they appreciate each other. But I have to admit, sometimes I have to do psychotherapy before I can do sex therapy. If they're really angry with each other, they're not going to want to have sex. But that's all of these things. But again, silliness is a way to feel all 4 things: blessed, prosperous, happy, and healthy. And, you know, I think you'll want to incorporate some humor into your relationship, because keeping it healthy can be a laughing matter. It really can be. It feels so good to laugh. And I think that this program is about to end. I haven't heard the music yet, but next week I'll have Sherry Winston, and we're going to talk about female pleasure. She has written a wonderful book that I really value a lot. I heard her presenting at a conference a couple of years ago, and her book is Succulent Sexcraft, Your Hands-On Guide to Erotic Play and Practice for Men and Women, Singles and Partners. So there's the music cue. Thank you for listening, everybody, and I'll be back next week with a guest who'll go the full hour. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye. Labirinto di un amaro autore. Ma i tuoi piedi, tap 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 tap. Ma i tuoi piedi, tap 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 tap. Happy feet, da da da. Happy feet, da da da. Happy feet, oh, I love it, love it. Happy feet, da da da. Happy feet, da da da. Happy feet.